Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I need a dollar, dollar, dollar. That's what I need. Hey, hey. Well, I need a dollar, dollar, dollar. That's what I need.
Making Sense, that's C-E-N-T-S, of Spotify. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer, and today on the show, a Soundcheck smackdown about the money behind music streaming and whether it's worth it in the end for musicians. Plus, a live performance from the Desert Rock Collective to Narewin. But first, it used to be pretty straightforward. You'd go to a store, buy a record for, say, $10, and the artist got a portion of that sale. Then along came iTunes. You download a digital track for 99 cents, the musician gets a cut. Now there's an increasingly popular way to get your music fix. Streaming sites like Pandora, Rhapsody, Turntable FM, and, as of last week, Spotify. These sites pay musicians in a new way each time their song gets streamed on one of the sites. In a moment, we'll smack down whether these streaming services are really a good deal for musicians, but first, let's get some of the facts. Glenn Peoples is a senior editorial analyst at Billboard magazine. He's been covering Spotify and the other streaming services for Billboard. Glenn, welcome back.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So let's talk, first of all, dollars and cents. Probably cents, probably fractions of cents. What are musicians getting from services like Spotify?
Well, it really depends on who the musician is. You know, if the musician is signed to a label and is getting a royalty based on a download or a stream, it's not going to be the full amount. So if you're talking fractions of cents for the payout of a streaming service like Spotify, the artist is getting a fraction of that fraction.
And are we, in fact, talking about fractions of pennies?
Well, we are. You know, I've heard ranges all over the place, and I've talked to a number of people at labels in European countries where Spotify has been operating for over 2 years. You know, some have kind of accepted what it is. A lot of them are not terribly happy about it, and it's because it really is a fraction of a cent. Now, there's a blog called Digital Audio Insider, and it's written by David Harrell, who's in the band The Layaways. He does a very good job of explaining what his band gets, because his band owns its masters, so it's like its own record label. Mm-hmm. So they get the full payout. In a blog, one of his posts recently, he kind of laid out what his most recent Spotify payment was, and it was 1.45 cents per stream, and an average over about the last year and a half of almost 0.3 cents per stream.
Wow.
So it's been coming up. It's still small.
So that, in other words, you would need 3 or 4 streams of your song to get one penny in royalties.
That's true, yeah.
But it's not like Spotify or Rhapsody are paying the musicians directly, right? They pay through the record labels.
Well, they pay whoever owns the song. Mm-hmm. They pay the rights holders. Now, a lot of independent artists are truly independent, and they own their master recordings. So if they get the money straight from their distributor, it goes into their pocket. You know, deals vary very widely, you know.
Yeah.
But I think what most people are listening to is an artist signed to a label. That artist is getting a royalty. It's a fraction of a fraction of a penny.
Now, let's compare what they're getting from a service like Spotify to, you know, what they would get from a download on iTunes, for example.
Yeah. You know, a 99-cent track, iTunes keeps 70% of that. So roughly the distributor, and let's just call it the label, is going to get 70 cents for that. So if you're your own band and label, and that's your song, and you've uploaded it to iTunes through a service like TuneCore, TuneCore is going to pay you 70 cents. CD Baby, which the Layaways use, takes, I believe, a 9%
right.
distribution fee, and so that 9% comes out of that 70 cents. So, but obviously, 60 or 70 cents is a lot bigger than, you know, 0.2 cents.
Yeah.
It takes about, you know, for the Layaways' most recent Spotify payout, it would take 48 streams to equal what the band would get for one 99-cent download, and that's before the distribution fee.
All right. Now, Glenn, is that a fair comparison to make, Spotify versus CD, or should we be comparing Spotify to something like YouTube, or to radio, where, you know, radio stations for decades have, you know, you pay your statutory license fee and, you know, you're basically covered.
Yeah. Well, you know, terrestrial radio stations don't even pay record labels.
Right.
They pay publishers. Internet and satellite radio, they do pay record labels and performers. So it really...
And they complain bitterly about it as well.
What's that?
They complain bitterly about it.
And they do. They do. And you know, maybe that'll change soon. It's hard to say. But you know, that is one of the difficulties of this transition that the industry is in, where these streams, the numbers sound so low, but they are what they are, and it's very difficult to compare them to a previous era. It's mm-hmm. difficult, just as it was difficult to compare what you got from iTunes compared to what you got in the CD boom of the late 90s. It's very, very difficult to stomach the realities of whatever era you're entering.
And in terms of radio, you know, for years I would get stories from musicians saying, you know, I knew you played my song on the radio because I got a check from BMI, one of the licensing organizations, for 18 cents or something like that.
Yeah.
So, you know, but radio is what then sold all of those CDs in the boom years. So are we looking to services like Spotify to serve that kind of purpose?
Well, you know, there are different schools of thought on that. Some schools of thought say that radio is a gateway to discovery mm-hmm. and leads to purchases. And I think you know, we look at CD sales over the years and album sales, and that seems to hold a lot of truth to it. You know, these days where there are so many other options for people to pick up music, free or illegal, after they hear something on the radio, that cause and effect is not the same as it used to be, but radio still matters a lot, and it matters because it drives sales and it drives general awareness. You know, the other school of thought is that it's just a substitute, and that Spotify is a substitute for purchasing, that Pandora is a substitute for purchasing, and I think Pandora listeners, the feeling I get is that they use it as radio and it inspires them to make purchases. But, you know, there's no guarantee. There's really no guarantee, and that's why rights owners want to get paid for every little revenue stream they can.
And even if they're talking about fractions of a cent, you hope that's going to eventually add up. Now,
yeah.
do artists have to participate if they're on a label? I mean, we heard a lot about Spotify getting the four remaining major labels to all sign up. So do you have to be in it?
Well, it depends on if you're on a major label, how much pull you have. And some of the older artists that we've seen over the years have not had their songs on iTunes, for example.
The Beatles, of course.
And the Beatles. And some artists like Kid Rock do not want to sell single tracks, and he'll sell full albums. And a lot of artists want to sell full albums only and don't want to sell single tracks. And they're going to have to you know, have that conversation when they go on to streaming services as well. So not every artist has enough leverage to say, I want to be here, I don't want to be there. If you're an independent artist, you have a lot more say in where your music is distributed, of course.
Right. Not everybody is Bob Dylan. And before Spotify launched here in the U.S. last week, Bob Dylan had pulled his back catalog from streaming services in the U.K. Speculation was that his management wanted to negotiate higher royalty rates than his label, Columbia Records, before allowing a service like Spotify to carry his stuff. So if you are on Spotify, you can find some Bob Dylan, but maybe not what you're expecting. You will find this. Hoping to hear Bob Dylan singing If Not For You on your Spotify player, well, this is as close as you're going to get. The London Pops Orchestra. We're speaking with Glenn Peoples, senior editorial analyst at Billboard magazine. So there are some holes in the streaming services. And, you know, there is the question, Glenn, of whether these free ad-based or even subscription-based streaming services will actually cannibalize downloads, that instead of inspiring people to go out and buy more songs, they will actually just get people to kind of sit back and say, I can listen to it anytime I want on my little cell phone here.
That's true. That is a worry out there. And, you know, I got to say about streaming services, it really depends on how often people listen. And if the quantity is there, then it really, the per stream payout really doesn't matter as much. And that's what the services are banking on. That's what everybody's hoping for, is that people use these services a lot and the volume is there. But like you said, it's a small amount, and there is a lot of concern that it's going to cannibalize sales. You know, CD sales are declining, even though this year they've kind of declined at a much lower rate. Album sales are flat this year, or up maybe 1% in the U.S., and so there is this kind of plateau right now, and it'll be very interesting to see what happens later in the year after the launch of Spotify, after Pandora's IPO, to see exactly what happened in digital music.
And in the long run, what happens to music in general as a result of all these streaming services that are now out there? Glenn Peoples, Senior Editorial Analyst at Billboard Magazine, nice talking with you again.
Thanks for having me.
And in a moment, we will debate whether these streaming services are a bane or a boon for musicians in our Soundcheck Smackdown. We'll ask you to weigh in. And coming up later, we'll hear a live performance from the desert rock group known as Tinariwen. This is Soundcheck. Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. We've been discussing the dollars and cents of music streaming. Now, at least streaming services pay something, unlike your teenage son illegally downloading music. That at least is the theory. In practice, the launch of Spotify in the U.S. raises the question of whether these streaming services are a boon for artists or the bane of their existence. It's a question for this week's
Soundcheck Smackdown!
And joining me now in the studio is Steve Smith, music editor for Time Out New York. Steve, welcome back to the program.
Thank you very much.
And also joining me in the studio is the bassist and composer Ben Allison, whose newest album, Action Refraction, you were hearing just before and after our last break. Ben, welcome back to Soundcheck.
Thanks, John.
Now, you guys actually the bell rings now, but you guys came out fighting on Twitter a couple of days ago. Ben, you started it all by tweeting that Spotify in the U.S. means a quarter of a cent per play in royalties. We'll all be driving cabs soon.
That's right.
Where did you get that figure from?
Well, it's actually not even necessarily accurate. It could be way less than that.
Well, as Glenn was saying, more like 0.2 cent, two-tenths, one-fifth of a cent.
That's right.
Is the average.
That's right. And it's an algorithm that it reminds me of like a derivative invented by a hedge fund manager. It's a very complex pool.
But it's something. Wage. I mean, this is the theory. Mm-hmm. You're getting something opposed to nothing.
Right.
So what are you complaining about?
That's right. So the baseline here is that music is free. That's the baseline that we're... So we're comparing this to outright piracy, where people just take music. I think there's... What started it for me was with the new record, and it came out a couple of months ago, as you mentioned, and I've been put some Google alerts for the name of the record and my name and would see what people were writing. These blogs would come up written by what sounded like fans. I mean, they were reviews of the record. They'd have the album artwork. They'd list all the tunes. They'd talk about the music in positive terms. And then at the bottom, there'd be a link to a file sharing site where you could download it for free. And it was just kind of mind-boggling. These are people that are fans. These are the actual fans. These are the people that are into the music, and they're trying to alert their friends and their readers to this art. But they're, you know, they could put any link. They could put a link to Amazon. They could put a link to my website where I sell my own music. But no, they put a link to the file sharing site. So I started posting. I posted a couple. I had a free weekend, and I posted a couple of comments. You know, why are you doing this? Why wouldn't you put a link to my site? Half of them took down the reviews. The other half fixed the link and and forwarded it to my site or Amazon or whatever. But what was amazing to me was the comments that I would get from other readers of the blog. Outrage. They were outraged that I would suggest such a thing. Like, what are you doing? This is a guy that's just writing about your music. It's all about exposure, man. It's all about people finding your music. Isn't that what you want?
Mm. Steve, is that sort of stealing some of your argument there? I mean, isn't part of the argument that places like Spotify may only pay a quarter of a cent, but it's exposure?
Yep. You know, this is not going to be the bloodiest of smackdowns because intrinsically there's a big part of this that I agree with Ben about, and that's that artists actually do deserve to be compensated for what it is they do. And we're facing an entire wave, a generation or whatever you want to call it, where music has come to be viewed as kind of this free, unlimited resource. And, you know, whether it's seeing people exclusively playing CDRs on their Discman, if they've even got one of those old antiques with them, or if it's just purely, you know, you can Google any record pretty much that ever existed and have it for free on your hard drive within 30 seconds. And there is no monetization within that equation whatsoever unless you're going to really tap dance out onto that tight wire and say, well, the exposure is going to drive people to Ben's shows and they're going to buy Ben Allison t-shirts and, you know, everything finds its level that way. But, you know, the fact is music is not this tapless resource. There is, you know, artistic endeavor that deserves to be compensated. So yes, part of my stance on Spotify, the part that makes me sleep well at night, is the fact that they are paying something and that there is a stream of revenue recognizing that artists are creating something.
And so you're saying it's a stream of revenue, Ben, suggesting that maybe it's just a token stream of revenue.
A trickle. It's a trickle-down theory of revenue.
Listeners, what do you think? Could streaming sites like Spotify or Rhapsody be a good thing for artists? Or are you concerned that streaming will hurt musicians even more? Especially if you're a musician, we'd love to know what you think. Give us a call, 212-433-WNYC. That's 433-9692, or leave a comment on the soundcheck page at wnyc.org/soundcheck. So, Ben, who are you angry at? I mean, is it the streaming services like Spotify who are paying such a paltry amount, or is it the record industry that has agreed to this sort of thing, or is it the? I mean, there's so much.
Yeah, well, I mean,
blame to go around.
That's true. I'm in a particular point in my career. I'm like mid-career, right? So I'm not starting out. I'm not jumping in a van with my friends and playing door gigs across the country. But I'm also not a jazz musician, right? So it's a pretty small market to begin with. But one point I actually wanted to make, that this kind of goes back to what the guy was saying before about radio. Over the years, if you look at a pie chart of like how people buy music 10 years ago, was mostly CDs. Gradually, as the technology's changed, then there's the MP3 download. There's a larger there's a larger revenue stream for actually downloading. Now what we're talking about, and this is my fear, is now the cloud is coming on. It's been coming for years, but now what we're talking about is actually not downloading. It's not about radio bringing new people to the music. You're talking about people doing this instead of buying music. Mm-hmm. So now it is just so convenient. Spotify is uber convenient. Everybody I know that I talk to loves the interface. It's just about, wow, this is so much easier than like going to iTunes and downloading a tune. And, you know, my fear is that this is going to slowly become the way people listen to music. Over the years, my books, I used to have a ton of books. Now they're all on my iPad. Why? Because it just takes up, I live in a New York apartment. Space is a premium. Why would I physically download a tune and own it when I can just stream on demand? And the streaming on demand is really the crux of the issue.
Well, Steve, now you have been using Spotify, actually pre-US release.
I've been using Spotify for just over a year now because they set me up with an evaluation membership last June.
Right. And do you find yourself, maybe even against your better judgment, sort of following the steps that Ben is afraid many of us will follow with these streaming services?
Well, yes and no. Yes and no. And let me explain that in terms of it's an experience that you can sort of customize to the way that you want to intake your music and how serious you are about this versus that. You know, I mean, I enjoy Foo Fighters singles quite a lot. I don't feel compelled to own Foo Fighters albums. I'm sorry, Dave Grohl. but I'm very happy to pay money for something that will give me access to hear that whenever I want, or to hear Mr. Roboto because I can't get it out of my head. But on the other hand, if you truly want to have something that is your possession, and, you know, Ben was just talking about downloading, let's talk about all the Kindle users who suddenly woke up one day and found all of their George Orwell books missing from their collections, or perhaps the Netflix streamers who were halfway through the first season of Dexter and suddenly found out that it wasn't available anymore. In the end, only by purchasing a recording do you actually have complete control over your collection, quote-unquote. Right. And I was actually thinking about this in terms of jazz, in terms of John Coltrane is a great example, and Impulse Records in general. On Spotify, if you go find the Coltrane section, first off, you're going to be searching through several dozen weird European releases because things have fallen out of copyright here. But once you get to the Impulse Records, you're going to notice that almost every single one of them is missing tracks. That's not the case, by the way, if you go to those same albums on Mog.com or RDO.com. Everybody's got their own different arrangements. But the only way you are actually going to still have control over your collection is to own that collection, right, and download it.
So it is your collection only if you actually have collected it yourself.
That's
as opposed
exactly
to
right.
Waiting for the cloud to sort of come around and shower you with the exact music that you want. All right, we're discussing today, our SmackDown is, the topic is, you know, streaming services like Spotify, like Rhapsody, are they good for music? Are they good for musicians? And Alex is with us on the line from the Bronx. Alex is a musician. And what do you think, Alex?
I think that every little bit counts when it comes to any kind of program like that, because maybe it's, you know, a quarter of a cent or a tenth of a cent or whatever, but there's lots of expenses that musicians have to come into, whether it's studio time for rehearsing or for recording, for duplication of CDs, for any little thing, you know, paying to get onto a compilation CD. These are all expenses that we don't have the money for because we've spent all our money on our gear or transportation to local shows that, you know, are filled with maybe 5 or 10 people, mm-hmm. 30 if we're lucky, you know?
And do you think getting a quarter or a fifth of a cent per stream is going to add up to enough money to, you know, pay any of those things you just itemized for us?
Well, I mean, it depends. It's not just something as simple as a quarter of a cent here and a quarter of a cent there. We can't rely solely on these things. We have to get our own exposure and let our fans know that we're on these mm-hmm. websites or these programs, and to check us out on there so that these things add up. Maybe 5 or 10 fans here, you know, are listening for a few days. They tell their friends, and that becomes 10 or 20. And over time, it adds up to maybe, you know, maybe even $100 a month.
All right,
and,
so it's the exposure thing that
exposure
we were talking.
Thing.
Yeah. Right. All right. Alex, thanks for the call. Let me go straight to Mark, who's here in Manhattan and has perhaps a different angle to take on this. Mark, what do you think?
Well, I'm a copyright attorney as well as a musician. And my view is that as long as Spotify keeps its fees to an extremely low monthly amount in order to attract customers, they effectively are imposing a ceiling on the amount that musicians can receive. So I can appreciate that Spotify wants to engage in the appearance of complying with copyright law and providing legal downloads instead of free ones. But the difference between a quarter cent and free is pretty minimal. Mm. So as a result, most musicians are receiving from Spotify barely enough to pay their rent for a month, while Spotify benefits and grows from the content that the musicians are providing.
Well, I guess one of the questions that we have yet to determine, because Spotify hasn't opened its books for the last year, is whether, in fact, Spotify is benefiting from this. I mean, they are keeping their monthly fees to $4.99 for no ads and to $9.99 to get the whole thing. Ben, are you in favor of, you know, these streaming services charging us more money so that musicians can get a bigger cut of the pie?
Well, I'm not going to tell them how to run their business. I mean, that's un-American. But I will say this. Well, first of all, can I just respond to Alex? Because
sure.
we're both musicians. He mentioned something interesting. He said that any little revenue stream, if I'm interpreting it correctly, helps us with our business, helps us, for instance, create our CDs. My concern here is that what CDs? Like, why would you make a CD, Alex? I mean, I have to ask myself this on a daily basis. Why would a label continue to exist? What's the point? Because CD sales, as I said before, are accounting for an increasingly diminishing part of how people get music. Mm-hmm. And at some point, there's no doubt they will be gone.
I just want to make clear, you're asking why would I make a CD, not why would I make music? Because presumably
right.
you're going to make music whether you're being paid to make it or not.
I'm talking about how you deliver it. Not the format. The format is changing, whether we like it or not. That's not for us to decide. That's for the market to decide. And there's no doubt that convenience is a huge motivator, and people love free stuff. There's an ice cream store in my neighborhood that once a year gives out free ice cream cones, and I can't tell you how many hundreds of people wait online for 2 or 3 hours at a time to get a free ice cream cone, which, you know, costs $2. So then the question is, really? You're going to spend 3 hours to save $2? I think people are really, really love the idea of free stuff, and they love the idea of not spending, and the culture of feeling that music doesn't have any value or should be free. The feeling that music is like water. You turn on the tap, it mm-hmm. comes out. Mm-hmm. This feeling that it's totally disconnected with a cost is something that I think is very dangerous.
All right. Well, let's take another call. Paul, another musician with us on the line from the Upper West Side. Paul, how are you feeling about all these streaming services?
I put my grandfather's Christmas song, I Was Waiting Up for Santa Claus, on iTunes, 3 years ago. I played only instruments. It took me my whole life to do the research and technical development. I had to play the instrument, and I had to make it sound like an old song. I called iTunes, and they said, well, 10 people have downloaded it and a few streamed it. I go, how did they do that? You know, I don't mind if you've got millions of dollars. And by the way, I did Google Jeff Beck's record, and I bought two copies. You know, Jeff Beck's new record's fantastic. But if you're not already loaded and got a good fan base and lots of cash, it's really, really hard for people just starting out to just basically you throw your hard work and people think it's free. And, yes, the cloud is very, very fearsome for me because I've got about 48 years old, and I'm a fully contained self-contained producer and technician and engineer at Festival Instruments, right? And what happens? You put out the first album, and it's gone in a click.
Yeah. And then I guess, at least if you're your own sort of self-contained entity, you make that decision. Ben Allison, you have a decision to make about your music. Will you put it on Spotify or these other services?
Well, actually, I am signed to a label. So, I'm one of these middle career sort of guys, or middle, I don't know what you say. But I'm on the one hand, I'm signed to a label, and on the other hand, I own my own publishing. So I have the same interests at this point that the label that I'm on has, in theory.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So it's a little bit different. Everyone's different. I mean, on the other hand, there are many artists that are signed to one of the four major labels, distribution wings of those labels who own the publishing rights. And, you know, the other part of this, which we haven't talked about, is those majors that signed deals with Spotify to make sure all of this huge amount of content was available to users are getting huge advances.
Well,
huge
not
monetary
only that,
advances.
They actually, Steve, they actually and, co-own part of Spotify.
And they own, right. So here's another, I don't mean to be a conspiracy theorist, but here's an idea.
Uh-oh.
What if, this is my concern, what if the whole idea here is to build up the value of Spotify in a speculative sense, in the way that Facebook's valued at whatever. And a lot of these valuations are not based on revenue at all. They're based on the possibility of future revenue. What if the idea is to build up this company, sell it off to Google or whatever, and Universal will make their cut, which again has nothing to do with the musicians and the people who own the, who made the music in the first place.
Well, this is obviously these are questions that we're not going to solve this afternoon on a little Soundcheck Smackdown debate. But let me thank our two debaters, Steve Smith, music editor for Time Out New York, Ben Allison, the bassist and composer whose music we were hearing earlier. Guys, thanks so much for joining us on Soundcheck.
Thank you.
And still to come, the sounds of American blues meet the sounds of the Saharan desert when the band Tanarawin joins us live in a moment. And if you enjoyed our recent segment on cover songs, you'll want to make your way to the Soundcheck page, because every day for the next 2 weeks, we're presenting two versions of a given song chosen by you, our listeners, to face off in a listener poll. And today, it's Bob Dylan's All Along the Watchtower. This is Dylan's version. But then, of course, there was the later cover by Jimi Hendrix. So it's champion versus challenger, again, on the Soundcheck webpage, wnyc.org/soundcheck. And this is not our fate. So let us not talk falsely now.